The following podcast contains explicit language.
We are so happy to be here, but a little nervous too, because a few years ago, people were saying that Oscars were so white. And since then, some real progress has been made.
Mm-hmm. But when we came out together, we know some of you were thinking, are the Oscars too black now?
But we just want to say, don't worry. There are so many more white people to come to.
Mm-hmm. So many. We just came from backstage, and there are tons of them back there.
Tons of them.
Mm-hmm. And not just movie stars. Nope. There are white people walking around with headsets, white people with clipboards.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I'm personally not a fan of white people with clipboards because I'm always wondering, what are they writing down about me?
All right, y'all, this is Aisha, and it's Represent, and it is, as of this recording, it is actually the morning after. I have gotten very little sleep because we were covering the Oscars. The culture team at Slate was, like, going full force. We put up something like 17 posts between the culture team, and I contributed a couple. And I'm tired, but we are here to talk about the Oscars because it was a big deal, and I am so happy to have today, for the first time on our show, Chris Lamberth.
Hi, Aisha.
Welcome, Chris.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here with you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. I'm so glad you came out here all the way from Jersey City.
No, it's Hackensack.
Where is Hackensack?
Hackensack is right across the George Washington Bridge.
Okay, so that's closer than Jersey.
Yeah, it's not. Well, they're about... Jersey City's about a half an hour from me, south.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, people, I live there, but I'm in the city all the time. And I, like, as a comedian, you're all over the place. So it's like, some people say, like, feel like Jersey's another country.
It does.
But it's actually nice. There's trees. It doesn't all smell bad. It's not just the intro to The Sopranos. It's really nice.
Well, as you already alluded to, you are a comedian, you're an actor, you're also the host of the podcast, The Mundane Festival.
Yes.
Which you've had me on quite a few times
now. Yes, yeah.
Most recently, we talked about Black Panther. So
right.
We can include some links to that later. But it's awesome to have you on, and we're going to talk Oscars.
Let's do it.
So... It was kind of a big deal this year. I think one of the common refrains was that this year felt like there was so much more riding on it politically than there happened in recent years.
Right.
It wasn't just about Oscars So White. It was also about the Me Too movement.
Sure.
It was about, there were certain films that touched on the culture wars, the battle of, quote unquote, the fake news media versus the presidential administration, if we're going to talk about The Post, which was nominated. Although I don't think it actually won anything.
It didn't win anything.
Yeah.
And it didn't really deserve anything.
Well, I would agree with that.
I mean, it was all right,
Yeah, it was fine.
All the President's Men, it was not Spotlight. It was not.
Right.
But it's a solid movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's, obviously we're going to talk about the Best Picture winner. I think there's quite a bit to say about that.
Mm-hmm.
Fish monster sex movie by Guillermo del Toro. But before we get into that, what are your, how do you feel about the Oscars in general? Like, do you watch it every year, or are you more of a, you follow it, but it's not like you're sitting by your TV glued?
I'm always aware of it. I always like to make my predictions, and I always like to watch as many of the films as I can. Since I became a SAG member last year, I got a lot of the screeners, so I was able to catch them all. And it's like my Super Bowl. It's like the actors' Hollywood Super Bowl. I remember it was like maybe mid to late November, whenever Lady Bird had its wide release. I remember skipping watching football to go see Lady Bird.
I'm so glad you said that, because I hate football. And I also consider the Oscars my Super Bowl.
Oscar is the most beloved and respected man in Hollywood. And there's a very good reason why. Just look at him. Keeps his hands where you can see them. Never says a rude word. And most importantly, no penis at all. He is literally a statue of limitations.
So what did you think of Kimmel's speech? I feel like he kind of... So he opened it, and of course he tackled, the Me Too stuff, the Weinstein, all of the allegations that have come up. And I think in some ways was actually pretty It was a pretty well done speech. I mean, I feel like some of the jokes fell flat. And Jimmy Kimmel, I think I've never found him particularly funny. I think he's more of we've seen him in recent, like in the last year or so, become very at his best when he's actually being really serious.
Yeah.
And talking about things on his show about like his child's health yeah. concerns, and railing on the Republican Party for the terrible things that they're doing mm-hmm. with all of the legislature and all of that. But I actually, you know, I found him, it wasn't the most memorable Oscar speech I've ever seen, but I feel like he did a good job of poking at the things that he should have poked at.
Yeah, it was fine. Like, I thought he did his job. I thought he was good. In these turbulent, intense times, I felt like he delivered. I wasn't, you know, doubling over laughing, but I thought he did his job. He handled it well, like as a comedian, like when you do think when you're in a situation like that. Yeah, he handled his business. It's
yeah.
fine.
I mean, if you're a comedian, if you were up there and had to give a speech, do you think that, I mean, granted, there are a lot of things happening. This is on ABC. It's network mm-hmm. TV. You have to kind of try to appeal to a wide audience. But do you think he could have taken it further?
I would have liked to have seen him take it a little further, but yeah. I understand. I would like to think that I would have tried to push the envelope a little more. But the little bit that he had with the Oscar, you know, he said, like, this man that he doesn't even have a penis and he keeps his hands to himself. It was funny.
Yeah.
You know, it was, you know, it's Disney. Mm-hmm. You know, he's getting those Disney checks. You don't want to do anything to, you know, to stop that flow coming in.
Right,
you know?
Right, yeah. So that happened, but then for a while throughout the night, it became about, you know, we had these people coming up and winning, and for the most part, it seemed like most of the more political statements, at least for the first half of the night, were mainly relegated to presenters and not to the winners. So mm-hmm. early on in the night, we had Sam Rockwell winning for Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Why'd you have that inflection in your voice? Because he won.
Because
and you knew he was going to win.
No, I mean that was another thing, is that like most of there really were no surprises. I think even when it came to Best Picture, it was like a toss up between two movies, and mm-hmm. one of the ones that everyone kind of assumed would win won. But Sam Rockwell winning for that movie, it's just not a good movie.
Can you speak on it though? Like, what? Now, why? Because I know, like, it seems like there's black people don't like it for a certain reason, and white people don't like it for a certain reason. And it seems like Three Billboards is white people's precious. Like, it's like you seeing like people, like they're like, oh, this is because I saw it early on, and I was like, oh, that performance from Frances McDormand was fantastic.
Well, the performances are great. And I think part of why the movie, and I will admit, I think I've admitted this before on the show, if
okay.
I haven't, but I will admit that when I saw it, I've only seen it once, mm-hmm. but when I saw it, I was like, oh, this is really, I was impressed. Like,
yeah.
I didn't see any problem with it. But I do think that the performances are so seductive, and so they're so committed to mm-hmm. their roles that they, for me at least, and I think for a few other people that I've talked to who are willing to admit it, it sort of entranced you and made you ignore the more problematic aspects of the movie.
Now, speak on the problematic aspects.
Well, better people than I have expounded on this. Encourage people to check out Wesley Morris's piece mm-hmm. From, I think it was from late last year, where he talked about the ways in which a lot of the characters are used as props, whether it's the Peter Dinklage character. Mm-hmm. Peter Dinklage plays like one of the townspeople who
yeah.
like has a crush on Frances McDormand's
sure.
Mildred.
Right.
And he just kind of circles around her in this like way that like you don't really understand why he would be interested in her, attracted to her. Then there's also the black characters, who one of them is like, she works, her coworker, and then she gets put in jail, but then she comes back and then nothing is really said of it. And she's put in jail because the cop is trying to force Frances McDormand's character to like stop pressuring her. She's like, this black person's going to go to jail until you straighten up and stop pressuring us to investigate your daughter's rape and murder. And then she comes back, and then it's like,
oh, I'm back. I'm out.
I get it, but it's like they. But see, now
the situations are just so implausible.
I get it. I understand where you're coming from and where Wesley's coming from, but it just seems like in this time now, it's like it has to, like, everything, every piece of art has to fit a checklist.
Because if
I got cast as the black dude that helped her with the billboard, I would fucking love it.
Okay, but
it would be great.
But you're saying this as an actor.
But no, but like, you know what? I think people are missing the point. If people looked at this movie like an impossible white man movie, do you guys know what that is?
I think I do.
So, like, a shout out to my man Rod Morrow from the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. He came up with this term called the impossible white man, where it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be, it can't be a superhero. It's a person that overcomes the odds regardless of how ridiculous things may be, but they overcome. Think Bruce Willis in Die Hard.
Okay.
Or like just something like that. And if you looked at it as an action movie, like Kill Bill, impossible white man movie. If you just look at Mildred like kicking ass and, you know, it's a heightened reality. But when I look at it, if we call this like our Super Bowl, you look at these people like athletes, you know, Frances McDormand, that performance was like, to me, like Russell Westbrook last year, his MVP season, where he was just, it was just like a runaway freight train.
Mm-hmm.
You know, granted, probably LeBron should always win, but whatever. But that performance was fantastic. And so that's what I took from that movie. And I said, okay, it's a great performance. It's fine. I get it.
That's fair. Look, I'm all for Frances McDormand having that award. Mm-hmm. And even Sam Rockwell, I don't think he should have gotten it. But
who should have got it?
You know, I would have been happy to see Willem Dafoe win for The Florida Project, just because, first of all, that was the only award it got nominated for. And that movie should have been in the Best Picture race. But
he really, like, he was good. But if we're talking about, if we're looking at him, if we're talking about this as a Super Bowl, he ain't really do that much.
See, that's where, look, the Oscars should not be for the most acting or the best acting. Otherwise, we'd always have Gary Oldman winning.
He didn't always win. Shit, he could have won for The Contender. Like, what was that, like 18 years ago?
Okay, fine. Whatever. I just think that the smaller performances often get overlooked because you think they're not doing as much. And the same thing with Daniel Kaluuya. You could argue that Daniel Kaluuya, I think a lot of people were pleasantly surprised that he got nominated for that. But I don't think people expected him to get nominated. When he did, it was great because he's doing so much there with so, like, not so little, because obviously Jordan Peele, like, put so much into that. But it's not easily detectable, at least not on the first watch.
Well, with that character of Chris in Get Out, he's the vessel in which we consume everything that's happened, the way that we're processing everything. So the looks that he has, everything that he did, like, he was great. Like, so that performance, but that's best actor. Willem Dafoe, he was good. He was great in it, but it wasn't like that scenery chewing moment. Like, do you like the moment? Because when you have these award shows and they show the moment, and the Academy Award nominee for best supporting actor, Chris Lambert, and it's like, he didn't have that, you know what I'm saying? Like, they showed a scene where he's what, like, telling the girl to clean up or something. It's
they chose the wrong scene. Also, I think the moments were just too long in general that they were choosing. But that's a whole other thing. But back to the actual Oscars themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do want to talk more about the sort of political statements that we saw in the night. And, you know, Sam Rockwell did not really say, he didn't say anything political really at all. He told like a very sweet story about like going to the movies and his dad lying about something about his grandmother, and he's like, no, we're just going to the movies.
I thought it was neat.
It was sweet.
Liked it.
But then, you know, we did have, going back to Frances McDormand, she had sort of the, I think maybe the speech of the night, or like one of the most, like, one of the ones that I think we're going to remember years from now, because she, you know, she did the whole thank you, whatever, but then she also towards the end of her speech was like, I want all the women mm-hmm. to get up. Meryl, she was like, Meryl, if you do it, everyone yeah. will do it. And so every woman who was nominated, I think, stood up. We couldn't see everyone, but, you know, you got glimpses of people like Greta Gerwig standing and Octavia Spencer. And, you know, she said, you know.
Okay, look around, everybody. Look around, ladies and gentlemen, because we all have stories to tell and projects we need financed. Don't talk to us about it at the parties tonight. Invite us into your office in a couple days, or you can come to ours, whichever suits you best, and we'll tell you all about them. I have two words to leave with you tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Inclusion rider.
And I thought it was a great moment. And I really, it was a way, I think, to acknowledge all the Me Too stuff. But instead, like, we've been talking about the Me Too stuff, and I think obviously it's very important to talk about the ways in which the trauma and the actual, like, acts that are, sure. the sexual acts that are being committed against these women. But at the same time, I really like that it kind of put the focus back on the work again and mm-hmm. On the ways in which all of this, all of these really bad men and people in power are affecting not just them personally, but also their careers and their livelihoods, and how it can hold them back from, you know, getting the projects that they should get that should get made, for getting the funding, the financing. And so I loved that she shouted that out and made that a point of her speech.
Yeah, I like how she said, "Don't do it tonight at the after party. Come, give it a couple days, because it's nice to have the pomp and circumstance during the ceremony, but actually, you know, follow through."
Yeah.
And then you give Kobe Bryant.
Yes. Well, yeah. But I mean,
like, it was allegedly, it was alleged, but it's like.
Well, so, yes, Kobe Bryant, just so listeners know, Kobe Bryant became the first ex-NBA player to win an Oscar. Mm-hmm. And he won for a animated short that he did along with Glenn Keane, who's a very famous animator. He's done lots of Disney movies and is a very well-respected guy in the business, and it's based off of the, like, 2015 poem, I guess it is, or like sort of love letter he wrote to basketball when he retired. And so it's I haven't seen it, but from all everyone I know who's seen it, they're like, it's all right.
It's all right. Like, they showed it when they retired his two jerseys. Yeah. And it was like, yeah, you know, okay, he got two jerseys retired, but he changed his number to 24 after he got caught cheating on his wife.
For those who don't remember, and because I actually had to, like, kind of look up the facts of this again, because I remember it happening, but when all this went down, it was 2003, I was in high school, so, like, I wasn't even really paying attention. But Kobe Bryant allegedly cheated on his wife, although the woman he allegedly cheated on with actually claimed that she was assaulted. Like, she was mm-hmm. she was raped. And the case was very, if you go back and read the details, he denied it. And or at first he also lied at first. Like, he told investigators that he did not have sex with her, but then he said, actually, we did have sex, but I thought it was consensual. And so the whole, if you look back on it, we actually have a piece in Slate about it today, that people can check out. But if you look back on it, it's sort of it outlines all the reasons why women are hesitant to come forward. Mm-hmm. It's like that perfect case of, like, she was the prosecution or the defense just went after her entire backstory. They tried to attack her character. Some of her stuff was inconsistent, but she says that it was because she didn't think that they believed her, like the people who were investigating mm-hmm. her believed her. And look, he went on to have another, like, what, 12 years?
He won a bunch of championships after that.
Right.
And
but to see him get an award, and then also to see Gary Oldman win Best Actor for Darkest Hour, and he's been accused of domestic right. violence. And also, I'd forgotten about, in 2014 when he was promoting, I think, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, okay. he went off on a rant defending Mel Gibson for calling, you know, for that whole anti-Semitic rant. He said, quote, "He got drunk and said a few things, but we've all said those things. We're all fucking hypocrites. Mm-hmm. The policeman who arrested him has never used the word the N-word or uh-huh. that fucking you." It's like,
it's like the waters are murky. With Kobe, I'll just say the waters are murky enough to be like, I don't know. And then this time where it's like he got double teamed by Me Too and Time's Up, and he just dunked right over him for like getting like it's just it's amazing. So with Gary Oldman, I mean, he was good. Like the movie wasn't that like
maybe it's the fact that you actually can't tell that it's Gary Oldman because he completely isn't. He's in a fat suit. He's got like his whole face is this makeup stuff happening. Maybe that's what it is. I also just found that movie incredibly boring.
It wasn't that good.
But
what I will say, what should have happened, if you really want to keep it grimy, not grimy, but if you really want to keep it 100, Denzel should have won for Roman J. Israel. I know people didn't like the movie. He was really good in it. If you talk about like building a character from ground up, like somebody that was on the spectrum, autism spectrum, just a really great performance, and keeping the sports theme is like LeBron losing in the finals, but he was great. You know, he lost. The movie's not that great, but
yeah,
that was a really terrific performance. But yeah, like that movie, Darkest Hour, it was a slog to get through. But I will say, shout out to the like two or three black extras that they had. And one black dude on the train that surprised me when I saw it.
Yes.
He had a couple lines. I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. I was impressed.
Wow, yeah, for a British period piece.
Hashtag black actors. I was impressed. I was impressed.
I will say, though, it is a weird hodgepodge, though, mm-hmm. between having Kobe Bryant and Gary Oldman win, mm-hmm. But then also, obviously, having Jimmy Kimmel making these jokes, having women like Salma Hayek and... Mira Sorvino and all these women who have accused these men publicly stepping up and saying, you know, time's up, no more, when this is all happening at the same time. And, you know, I think that so they had this sort of representation montage that happened late into the night. And Selma Hayek was one of the presenters. Oh, Selma Hayek and Ashley Judd. And I forget who the third
Annabella
woman is.
Sciorra.
Annabella Sciorra sort of introduced this representation montage. And I thought that Kumail Nanjiani, who was nominated for The Big Sick, I think that he was probably like the highlight of it.
Some of my favorite movies are movies by straight white dudes about straight white dudes. Now straight white dudes can watch movies starring me and you relate to that. It's not that hard. I've done it my whole life.
You know, the Oscars does this. They pay lip service in many ways whenever things like this happen. Obviously, Chris Rock, when he hosted a few years ago in the midst of Oscars So White, that was a big thing.
Right.
Do you, what did you think of that? Did you feel as though, like, in a way this felt different to me? It felt a little bit more organic just because, unlike those previous years, we actually had people of color and more women nominated in categories they're not usually nominated in. As opposed to those years before? Like, did it feel...
It was nice to see, but it felt like bullshit because Kobe and Oldman won, and you leave out people that probably should have got some nominations. I feel like it just didn't ring true, you know? So it's just kind of like, well, what are we doing here?
There was one Academy voter, I think it was in the Hollywood Reporter, they do this every year where they interview people
right.
about who they voted for. And one of the Academy voters, it was anonymous, but they were just like, yeah, I saw Get Out. It's a fine, like, B-movie, but I didn't think it was that great. And then I remember being at a luncheon and Daniel Kaluuya was, quote-unquote, lecturing us on race. And I was like, this isn't about Black Lives Matter. And I was like...
Yeah.
Wow.
It's the constant struggle that like what Kumail alluded to was the fact that like as a minority, like just at stripping away that I'm an actor or comedian, but I'm a fan of movies. We're asked every weekend to find humanity and to people that don't look like us, like just off the rip. Like that's what it is. And so when it comes time for us to be seen as people, you know, just as regular people, it's so hard for them to do.
Yeah.
And to me, that just, it doesn't, because I went through that doing theater in Chicago, where like black art isn't as appreciated unless it's at a certain theater.
Steppenwolf.
Or the Court Theater, where it's like every February. They used to, I don't know if they do it now. There's a certain thing where like if you see black people in the past, And it's good to empathize with these black people because that's in the past and I don't have to really connect with that. And I wasn't there. And then I could say, oh, I feel sorry for these people. And then I can leave the theater and clutch my purse when I see a black guy with school books walking by.
Yeah.
It's just it that's something that frustrates me a lot because it just shouldn't be. It just shouldn't be. It sucks.
I want to bring that back to Frances McDormand's speech, which we mentioned earlier, because she ended her speech with, she said two words, inclusion writer. Mm-hmm. Myself and many other people went and Googled it. And inclusion writer is essentially the idea that, you know, there's actually a great TED Talk that we at Slate pointed out to, and they explained that what it is it's when, you know, in any given show or movie, there will be dozens of speaking roles, and maybe like about 8 to 10 of them will be the main, like they'll be the main characters, and they mean like they have to be cast in a certain way. And then the rest of them, like they can be whatever you want. Yeah. And so if they can be whatever you want, you should, a writer, actors, people in a position of power can make sure that those roles are cast the way that they would conceivably be. Like if you are in New York City, like you better be seeing not just straight white dudes or just white people in general. Like there should be plenty of people in the background. I've always like, if you, if a Woody Allen movie had an inclusion writer, can you believe how much, like, somehow he manages to create New York City areas where there's not a single black person to be found?
On his Amazon series, I had a friend that was on, a black actor that was on his series. But yeah, it's, I'm noticing that going in on auditions that it's like pretty much colorblind. Like this person can be any ethnicity and. So I'm starting to see that change and stuff. So that is
good.
But
colorblind feels different though, right? From like actually saying like we need these types of like I feel like with colorblind you can easily get into, well, we're saying it's colorblind, but then like we might just still wind up with like a bunch of white people.
It's like with the advent of a film like Black Panther, I think it's a step in the right direction. But as you and I have discussed, is there going to be a follow through?
Yeah.
Like you said you were optimistic. What did the term that you used?
On your podcast, yeah. I probably said like cautiously optimistic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's just like you kind of look at it like this is great, but you kind of side eyeing a little bit like what are y'all really going to do? What's going to happen?
Right. Well, that leads me to the last award of the night, which was Best Picture, and Shape of Water wound up winning. And I was just kind of like, meh, that was a safe choice to make.
It was fine.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't Three Billboards. So like you can't be outraged.
And it was from a dreamer.
Yes, it was from a dreamer, Guillermo del Toro. But at the same time, it like bringing it back to your point earlier about this movie was set in the past. Mm-hmm. It is filled with nostalgia. It's set during the Cold War. The allegories fit very neatly. You have Octavia Spencer's character playing, you know, she's the hardworking black woman. Mm-hmm. You have Richard Jenkins playing her, the gay best friend.
Can we just say like her husband was just like the worst black character of 2017. He was just horrible. What a horrible guy.
Yeah. Yes. And then you finally have Sally Hawkins, who is playing a mute woman. And I just think that when you have it dealt with all of these things that we've been talking about, Me Too, you know, race, the queer representation, and even just like politics and Russians, like, you know, it had everything. Mm-hmm. But it just felt like Get Out would have been such a more radical, out of the box choice.
It would have been.
Because it deals with the here and now, and it doesn't let white people off the hook. And
That's the thing where it's like it's good. Like it's like Issa Rae kind of spoke to this when she said, "I'm rooting for everybody black," and that's something that I think most people have carried with them when it comes to a lot of these award shows. But it's like I was surprised that the nominations came for the movie because it was a movie that came out in February,
a year ago,
and it sustained, like, that's wire to wire like just being in the conversation for that long, it's incredible.
Yeah.
So it's just like I was not surprised by that. I just thought like the nominations were kind of for some of them could have been they were bullshit because I felt like Tiffany Haddish should have gotten a nomination. Even if you were going to give it in a year where nobody was going to win, it was a toss up between Metcalf and
Allison Janney.
And Janney, yeah. Where it was like nobody was going to win. If you really want, just give her the nomination. You had her all up in the videos, like doing the little
mispronouncing everyone's name.
but you had her there. Yeah. It's like put her in the conversation in that way, like make an impact instead of giving Mary J. Blige a nomination to where it was like, like she really didn't like. I know I'm at Chris Lambert. Don't at Aisha. But if you really wanted to do something, you could have put Tiffany Haddish there. You take Mary J. Blige.
I've already said that. I've gone on the record and said that.
Said that before too. You take her out. Maybe you even give Allison Williams in it. You even put her in there?
I would have put Allison Williams there. I also would have loved to see Holly Hunter from The Big Sick in there.
Yeah.
Like, I just...
That's great.
Look,
yeah.
I root for everyone black, except I'm also discerning, and I was not rooting for Mary J. I love her generally, but I was not rooting for her in that instance. I was also not rooting for Common, who like thinks he can rap all the time. I'm tired of him rapping.
So I got mad. I am really shocked by you right now, Aisha. Now, Common is in my top five.
Okay, but Common circa 2005 or Common now?
Common is in my top five.
Whatever.
I can't.
Okay. Well, really quickly, before we wrap up, what were some of your other highlights of wins or moments from the night?
Viola Davis.
Looks
in that
stunning.
Dress. Oh, my God. Like, she's always been somebody like she's always looked good, but she was radiant. Like that was really just like she looked great. The biggest surprise for me was Jordan Peele winning.
Yeah.
This means so much to me. I stopped writing this movie about 20 times because I thought it was impossible. I thought it wasn't going to work. I thought no one would ever make this movie. But I kept coming back to it because I knew if someone let me make this movie, that people would hear it and people would see it. So I want to dedicate this to all the people who raised my voice and let me make this movie.
And I tweeted this, Aisha. Mm-hmm. I said, like, some of the old white voters looked at Get Out. And that was a hell of a win. That was a hell of a win.
That's the first black winner of the original screenplay award.
Yeah, because I was thinking one of and so his win, and the fact that Greta Gerwig did not win anything, Lady Bird didn't win anything. I was a little taken aback by that because
were you? I was not surprised. It was. I did not think she was going to go home
okay.
With anything. Yeah.
It just seemed like all the buzz, all the hype, I was expecting it to win. I was expecting her and Jordan Peele to maybe split like the best director. And I figured that Shape of Water would win the whole thing, win best picture. So I was kind of surprised by that. But it's almost like Lady Bird was one of those movies where I went in excited to see it because I like Greta Gerwig, but I was kind of taken aback at how I related to it more than I thought that I would. I was just like, oh, she didn't win, but Jordan Peele, like that was incredible.
Yeah.
I was pleasantly surprised by that.
A couple of my quick highlights were Coco winning Best Animated Feature, and I loved their speeches and the fact that they were among the few actual winners who it really felt to mostly like the people of color winners who actually said some political things and talked about the importance of Mexico and Mexican immigrants. And I thought that was great. I also loved A Fantastic Woman winning. I was very happy about, which we talked about last week in our last episode. But yeah, overall, it was an interesting night. And it was way too long. I thought that bit with them going to interrupt A Wrinkle in Time.
But,
I was like,
here's the thing. So you do the hot dog thing.
Yes.
But you try to play people off when they're talking about the short film.
And the Oscar goes to
The Silent Child, Chris Overton and Rachel Shenson.
It's like, yo, this guy's talking about this beautiful film that he made,
right,
and you're trying to play him off.
But lastly, my fiance, Rachel Shenton, it's really your hard work for the last 12 years that has really made this project authentic. Thank you so much, guys.
I don't know. I didn't like that part.
I know. That's just the way the Oscars are. It's like the small, the quote unquote smaller awards always get played off. But anyway, we talked a lot about the Oscars. If y'all have thoughts on them, you should definitely share them on our Facebook, on our Twitter. And Chris, where can folks find you?
You can find me at chrislamberth.com, Chris Lamberth on Twitter and Instagram. Mm-hmm. And you can catch me all over New York City doing shows and in the tri-state area.
And your podcast, The Mundane Festival.
The Mundane Festival podcast. And you can catch me on your TV screens. Catch me on Jessica Jones Season 2 and Tracy Morgan's new show, The Last OG. That Jessica Jones comes out March 8th. The Last OG comes out in April. So blinking, you'll miss me parts, but I'm there.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Chris.
Thanks so much for having me.